So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you along today as we take a look at Apple computers and accessories with Joe Rhodes. Joe's a regular on our show. He's a self-employed Macintosh support specialist, works in Madison, been supporting Macs professionally for the past decade. JoeRhodes.com?
.com.
Oh, let's see. Maybe I'll turn on your microphone. That'll work better. JoeRhodes.com.
JoeRhodes.com, yes.
And Rhodes is R-H-O-D-E-S.
Correct. Ironically enough, like the scholar, but not as much.
All right. Well, I tell you what. Apple, lots of announcements coming out of Apple.
They had a big event yesterday called Back to the Mac. And the big focus there was Macintosh, Apple computers, and Mac OS X, because we've been hearing a lot about iPods, iPhones, things like
right.
that. And Apple wanted to let us know that we are still the company that makes the Mac computer. A couple of interesting things that they had been talking about was the next version of Mac OS X, Mac OS 10.7. They've named it Lion.
Yeah, always animal names.
Always cat names,
cat
specifically.
Names, yeah.
So Mac OS 10.7, when the iPhone came out, they very specifically said, we've used the same software that we run on our Macs to run the iPhone. It just looks a little different. And as Apple said, they've really learned some interesting lessons as they've been making iPhones and now iPads.
iPads,
and they said, we've got all these great new things that we've learned. We're going to start to fold them back in to Mac OS X. So one of the bigger announcements that they've announced is there's going to be a new piece of software on Mac OS X called the Mac App Store. And it's going to run just like the App Store does on your phone. Developers will be able to write a neat little application that does something really cool, put it into the App Store, and then people who have Macintosh will be able to fire up this application and go and just browse and go, oh, I like this little thing. I want it.
Mm-hmm.
Buy it with one click, installs, no goofing around, no messing around, no tracking down a website, just happens just like it does on your iPhone. One click, there it is, ready to run.
Oh, that's nice.
That's going to be really interesting because I suspect that's going to give a lot of smaller developers a lot more mind share among consumers. It's going to be much easier for consumers to find some of these neat little apps that you have to kind of dig for right now. It's also going to be really easy for consumers because there's no serial keys, there's no installers, there's no disk images, there's nothing to download. You just find what you want, read a couple reviews, and pull the trigger, and it's ready to go.
Oh, that's great.
The other thing that they talked about, which I think is really interesting, is, again, they've learned all these lessons from the iPhone and the iPad, and they're looking at their laptop computers and say, what would happen if the iPad met our really small Mac laptop, the MacBook Air? And what they came up with is they have two new ultra-thin portables. They're even thinner than the previous MacBook Air, which was already impossibly thin.
Yeah.
I mean, it was crazy. The bigger one weighs 2.9 pounds.
Boy.
But what they've done a couple of very unconventional things. The big one that everyone's noticing, there's no more hard drive. There's no more box that every other laptop computer has where the hard drive fits into it. Either that hard drive is a spinning hard drive or the newer ones are solid state. They have flash, and Apple said, you know what? We're going to get rid of that, and we're going to do it the way we did on the iPad and the iPhone. We're going to put this flash memory right on the motherboard. Saves us a ton of space, it's cheaper to do, and leaves us a lot more room for the battery. So even though this laptop is now 2.9 pounds, they have a more rigid battery testing system doing wireless productivity, wireless web work, and they're still getting 7 to 8 hours of battery life out of it, which is hours longer than the more leisurely tests they used to use. So they came up with more stringent tests, and they got 2 hours more battery life. So that's some of the things. You know, Apple said, you know, hey, why do we have to have this hard drive?
Yeah.
So there's there's a number of other interesting things that they did where they took some of this technology they've learned with their portable devices and turned it into their laptops. So it's pretty exciting to be a Mac user.
Yeah, it is.
And the other crazy thing is the new laptops are available now.
Oh,
you can go out and buy one right now. The other big thing is Apple released FaceTime for the Mac. So we've had FaceTime on iPhone 4s, which lets us to make phone-to-phone video calls, kind of like we always saw in the Jetsons. Well, now you get to do it with your Mac as well to someone who has an iPhone 4 or an iPod Touch or another Mac.
Lots of interesting things going on in Mac world.
They got a lot of really smart people working there.
Let's go to John in Lake Phillips, Illinois. John, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I have a couple of questions. I'm a PC user, but my wife's a fourth grade teacher, And I have a daughter that's a sophomore at Carroll University. She's running a Mac, the white one, the laptop.
Yeah.
And my wife is using a Mac exclusively at school, and she's very involved in bringing the iPods into her classroom for a learning instrument.
Okay.
My second daughter is about to go to college. She reads a lot. I was thinking about a Kindle. Then all of a sudden I started thinking about a...
iPad?
iPad.
Yeah. Yeah.
My question with the iPad, because I want her to take it into college,
mm-hmm.
and what about printing capabilities and offloading, and is 32 gig enough? That's kind of my question.
Sure. Okay. Apple has actually just recently addressed the printing issue. It's not there yet, but they're going to be releasing, they said, this fall, quotation marks, the iOS 4.2 for the iPad. It's not there yet. It's going to be out soon. And that is going to have, finally, printing capabilities. Now, it's not going to print to just any old printer. There's a couple requirements. It has to be a printer that's hooked up to a Mac or a PC that is making it available to other computers on the network. But... yes, if you have, or actually there's about two HP printers that now have this built in. But the short answer is yes, you will at some point be able to print right off the iPad.
Okay.
Is 32 gigabytes enough? The answer depends on what exactly she's storing on there. The biggest consumer of space are videos, movies, TVs, things like that. Believe it or not, pictures, electronic books, even music for that matter, is just not all that large. So you can fit a whole lot of electronic books, applications, things like that on there. If she starts to enjoy movies and TV shows on the iPad, that's where more space starts to become nice.
For real.
32 gigs is still a fair amount of space.
Okay.
And the other thing is, with some of the things, for example, there's a Netflix application for the iPad where you don't store them locally, you just stream them over your internet connection. So you have Netflix, you get to watch all the movies and TV shows that Netflix makes available. You don't have to store any of that on your iPad. So if she's enjoying movies and videos that way, that kind of works around that little limitation, and I suspect at university she'll probably have a pretty good internet connection to do that with.
Yep.
Okay, what about... The Verizon's coming out with their version. I've heard a lot of, you know, Steve Jobs said some interesting comments at the meeting.
Yeah.
Yes. Basically, the Verizon version of the iPad is going to be the Wi-Fi only version of the iPad. And then Verizon has this little box that has a cellular radio built into it that basically just does, it receives the data over the cellular network and then creates a very local Wi-Fi network that your iPad can then join. So you do have two devices, but basically it does the same thing as the 3G-enabled iPad does on the AT&T network. The 3G version has both Wi-Fi and a cellular radio built into it. So since Apple's current use of chips doesn't support the technology that Verizon uses, Verizon instead has this little external box, and it's reasonably small, that will handle that for you. Which is a better option? You know, it really depends upon do you need to use the internet where you don't have access to a Wi-Fi network? So you're away from a coffee house or the university or your home or your office. If you're in a car somewhere, do you need to access the internet? That's where the cellular-enabled package comes into play. And then the question is, who's got the better deal, AT&T or Verizon? And who's got better coverage where you suspect you'll be spending most of the time using that cellular coverage?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
But the iPads themselves, virtually the same.
Thank you very much.
Yep, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. Marilyn in Neshkoro, let's turn to you now. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi there.
What's on your mind?
Well, I'm living about an hour and a half north of Madison in the middle of the woods, and sometimes I think we're in the black hole of communication here.
Okay.
Really. So I'm having trouble. I'm running a Mac Mini.
Okay.
And it's an older machine, OS X. And since I've changed to our server here, which I have no options, we have one and that's it, I'm having trouble with my Yahoo account. And I'm having trouble deciding or figuring out, is it Yahoo, is it the server, is it my computer? I'm wondering if you know, because you read all about this stuff, if you have heard that there have been any problems with Yahoo regarding, you know, what's going on with their programs.
Well, let me ask you this. When you say you've changed server, are we talking about your internet service provider, like how you get internet? Are you doing that with a dial-up?
No. I have a DSL.
Oh, you have DSL? Oh, fantastic. I didn't know you'd have DSL.
Well, some of the neighbors don't. We haven't got quite that far yet, but I do.
I have a client who lives out in the middle of nowhere, and she's her only option is satellite.
Oh,
And when you say you're having trouble with Yahoo, is there a particular part of Yahoo? Or is it email that you're having trouble with?
The email function.
Email.
Okay. And are you accessing their email through your web browser, or are you using Apple's built-in mail client? Looks has a little postage stamp.
No, I'm using Safari.
You're using it in Safari.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I am not aware of anything in particular with that. Now, do you know, is there any particular problem that you could tell me about?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a couple. First of all, when I open an email, very often the first thing it will say is, sorry, it's taking a long time, and then say, we can't open this, click here to try again. Now, I click there and try again, and then it opens.
Okay.
So, okay, that's a minor annoyance, but it's a little scary.
Sure.
But then, my goodness.
Oh.
My puppy's going wild.
Your puppy's going crazy.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. I can't send emails. I mean, if I send more than one line, it goes off and it says, I'm trying to remember here. It says, it's taking us longer than we thought. Just hold on. And then after a while, it says, sorry, we can't do this. If I try to go back to it, it's gone.
Hmm.
I mean, it goes somewhere, maybe. But
sure.
It's just gone.
Sure. All right. Well, there's a couple of things there. It sounds like there's a communication issue between your web browser and Yahoo. And that I think you probably already zeroed in on that one.
Uh-huh.
The question is, are you having trouble with other websites? Do other websites seem slow, or is it just Yahoo?
No, not at all.
Okay.
My
first thought is, let's see if we can try a different web browser. It's unlikely, but it's possible that maybe if we try a different web browser. And you've got two options I can think of right off the top of my head that are easy and free.
Mm-hmm.
One of which is Firefox, and you can go to getfirefox.com.
Right.
You can download it for free.
I downloaded Firefox the other day.
Okay.
Oh, good.
So you can try going to Yahoo using Firefox instead.
Okay.
You should see exactly the same thing, see if it behaves any better.
Uh-huh.
The other option is Google makes a web browser called Chrome.
Yeah.
And that's also free.
Is it Chrome like?
Chrome, like the shiny metal.
Chrome.
So if you do a Google search for Google Chrome, you'll get there right away. I know it. But I would try using perhaps a different web browser. I don't know, based on what you said, if that's going to make a big difference or not, but it's worth a shot.
Sure worth a try.
I did do one thing. I tried to open a different free email account using Hotmail.
Okay.
And the server, I think, bumped me off. It said, you've been bumped off this. I couldn't get to it.
That leads me to believe that it's probably something going on with your internet connection, and I can't be any more specific than that, but my first call would be make a list of websites you're having trouble with, for example, Yahoo, Hotmail, there may be others, and then give your ISP a call and say, I'm having a lot of trouble reliably accessing a couple of websites. Is there something going on with your system? Can you give me a hand? Perhaps they can look into it a little bit more so than we could.
Give that a try and see what happens, Marilyn. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org as we talk Apple computers and accessories with Joe Rhodes, Larry Mueller here, Jim Packard, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking your calls and your emails about Macintosh, Apple computers and accessories, and we talk iPads and iPhones and all kinds of things here with our guest, Joe Rhodes. And Steve in Milwaukee has a question for you, Joe. So let's go to Steve. Hi, Steve. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Steve.
Yeah, hi. I threw my PC in the dumpster and decided I wanted to buy a Macintosh.
Oh, Steve, tell me you recycled it first.
Oh, I didn't think of that. I was so angry, I just shot the whole thing in the dumpster. It was froze up, and I was just sick of dealing with it. I've only got $1,100 to spend. I was thinking of getting a Macintosh desktop, but I want to use it to write a book. I was wondering what you think I should buy.
Well, if you've got $1,100 to spend, you're right at the cusp of a couple of different Macs. The iMac, I want to say, starts at $1,100, and it is a phenomenal value. You're getting a beautiful screen, which, as a writer, that's probably the first thing you're going to appreciate, because your text is going to look really crisp, really clear. The machine is very fast, very powerful. The iMac is if you need a desktop, the iMac is a fantastic piece of equipment, and it's gorgeous to have sitting on your desk. Around that same price range, though, is the MacBook, even a touch less expensive. And the MacBook, what it has going for it, it's a smaller screen. It's still very crisp and clear, but you don't have as much screen, so you'll find yourself scrolling a little bit more. But you get to take it with you. So, you know, perhaps you're not inspired sitting in your office doing your writing, but you go to a park, and that's where the muse tickles you, and you're like, okay, great, I'm in the park, grab my laptop, I can start typing. So it's a tough call. The MacBook will be a touch slower, but the screen is really what you're paying for, is you get a smaller screen, whereas the iMac, you get a much better screen.
Yeah, I'd like a big screen.
Okay.
So, yeah, I would go, if you can, get to an Apple store and just test drive the iMac. I think if you sit down in front of one, you'll fall in love with it immediately.
When you buy PCs in other stores, they usually come loaded with the, you know, Windows and that kind of stuff, programs, you know, that you need. Is that the case when you buy a Macintosh? Does it come loaded with the stuff that you need?
It comes loaded with some things and not others. So what they don't include is a lot of trialware and a lot of 30-day demos and stuff like that. Apple draws a hard line. They don't want it on their machines.
Well, so the only thing I'm going to do with it is write a book.
Right.
So.
What I would suggest, it will not come with Microsoft Office. So if you're familiar with Microsoft Word, you may choose to buy Microsoft Word or Microsoft Office. Otherwise,
well,
Apple...
Macintosh, does it?
Yes, it does. Absolutely. Yeah. The other option is Apple has a suite called iWork, which includes a program called Pages, which is a Apple version of Microsoft Word, if you will. It's Microsoft Word, but it's done the Apple way. So everything is very drag and drop and, from my opinion, very, very intuitive and easy to use.
What did you say it was called?
It's called iWork. And the great thing about iWork is it's really cheap. And that appeals to my frugal side, let's say. And again, if you can get to an Apple store, give it a try and find out what it's like. And you can even, one of the things you can do when you buy a new Mac, you can sign up for a service. It's called one-to-one training, where you can go in every week if you so chose, and they will teach you one-on-one how to use any Apple technology that you want to learn. So if you say, teach me how to use everything there is to know about Pages, because you bought it for, I think it's $60, they will sit down and teach you how to use it and become a master.
Really?
I use Pages a lot. I love it. Now, a couple things you get to do with Pages that are very handy. You get to export as a PDF, so if you want to share it with someone else so they can have a read-only copy of it. You can also export it as a Microsoft Word document, so if you are working with someone else that is using Word, you can give them a copy that they'll be able to open as well.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Some emails in. Here's one from Heather, Joe, and she says, I have a new MacBook Pro and a new wireless Wi-Fi printer. The sales rep had me buy an AirPort so I could print wirelessly, but I can't figure out how it works. Does anything that I want to be controlled by the computer have to be physically plugged into the AirPort? What if the printer is in one room, but an audio system is in another room? Do I have more than one AirPort to have them connected?
No. AirPort runs kind of like a cordless phone. So you have a base station that's plugged into some sort of landline, and then you have handsets, and I put that in quotes. So a handset could be a wireless printer. It could be your Mac laptop. It could be anything else. Depending upon exactly what kind of printer this is, if the printer has wireless capabilities built into it already, what you need is you need to set up a wireless network first. And if your ISP, for example, AT&T, oftentimes will give you a modem that has wireless capabilities built into it, and it creates a wireless network. If it doesn't, for example, Charter usually just ships you a cable modem and that's it, then you plug an AirPort Express into it, and the AirPort creates the wireless network. Then you go to the printer, and this is where I have to be a little vague because it depends on the printer and exactly, but you have to follow the manufacturer's instructions for connecting that printer to your wireless network. So once your printer is on the wireless network, your laptop is then on the wireless network, then the two can talk to each other. And they can be anywhere as long as they're in range of each other. So again, going back to the cordless phone metaphor, as long as you're within the range of the base station, all these things can talk to each other. It's a little dependent on exactly what printer you bought, and you'll have to follow their instructions, but I've done this for many other clients. if the printer does not have wireless built into it, you can plug the printer into an Airport Express or an airport, and that will make it available over the network. So if it's a USB printer, you can plug it into a USB port on one of these Apple wireless devices, and then that device will make it available over the wireless network.
There you go. We have Beth emailing, wondering about the exact steps to take in creating an iMovie and then burning it to a DVD. She says, when I make a movie and burn it, the resolution on the DVD looks like you're looking through a shower door. Not very good resolution. So when I create the project, I use JPEG fine images, either large or medium size. Tried to make them small size, but when making the movie, the photos were not sharp when I played the iMovie. My images are pristine. I shoot with a Nikon D90 f2.8 lens and pride myself on good photos. So when I show the DVD, it does not come across clearly on any TV or neck player or another's computer. I did contact Apple at one time. They had me delete files from the OS, and this helped clear it a bit. But the DVD is not a replica of what I see on my Mac iMovie. That's a lot.
that's a lot, and I have to admit it's a little out of my area of core competence because I've done some iMovies, I've done very few iDVDs, and the short answer is I don't have a succinct and correct answer to that one, so I think I'm going to have to leave it alone. I would start with going to apple.com/support and look for the discussions forum.
Yeah.
And in the discussions forum, they will break down those discussions by each individual product. So you will find an iDVD forum, and chances are someone has ran into the same problem, asked it, and someone has probably answered it already. Those forums are a gold mine for finding answers to questions because it's people who are using the products asking questions and those same people answering. So you get very human-like answers as opposed to asking a technician when the technician gives you a very technician-like answer. It tends to be much more digestible because it's people speaking the same language you are. And Apple breaks it down really, really nicely into different categories, so you can usually get right to the forum that you're looking for.
Or you could ask my wife. She makes lots of movies and they turn out wonderful.
There you go. Call Larry.
Let's go to John in St. Germain. Hi, John. Thank you for calling.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Soon I'm going to be buying an iPad, but actually the problem I'm calling about is one I'm having with my Sony laptop PC.
Okay.
And I'm sure it happens to Mac owners as well. I clicked about a month ago on an ad when I was reading Salon.com. Ever since clicking on that ad, which I clicked off of right after that, my browser has been hijacked. So if I go to Google and Google a name like the President Johnson, for example, it'll give me all the websites that deal with President Johnson, the 1.2 million or whatever. But as soon as I click on one, it redirects me, takes me to, you know, another page that doesn't have anything to do with the website I clicked on.
Yeah, sure. Probably something that they're trying to sell. I'll tell you, I am not the most expert on cleaning up PCs, but I can give you a couple things to try. I'm much more of a Mac guy, but let's try this. There is a program that I've had very good luck with cleaning things off of PCs. It's called Malwarebytes. And if you search for Malwarebytes, Malwarebytes.org, if you search Google for that, it's a free little program. You get to download it, install it, update it, run it. I've got 9 out of 10 chances it will probably clear up your issue.
Wow, yeah. Wonderful.
I've had great luck with that program.
And you haven't had to use that program for Mac?
I haven't, actually. So,
okay.
I'm not saying it'll never happen. I don't want to be too conceited. I mean,
someday
we're going to get something. But right now, the Mac has been reasonably free from this sort of thing.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Let's go to Maureen in Eau Claire next. Hi, Maureen. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I am trying to justify buying an iPad as an artist. It's a big investment, $500, but I've been looking at the uses, and I'll explain why I'm considering it. I have a studio in my backyard that I don't have internet access to.
Okay.
And I thought the iPad might work for me setting sending all my photos to it or downloading them to it,
mm-hmm.
because it would provide an illuminated screen of the photos I might be working with.
Okay.
The other thought I had was I can travel with it, and there is I think there's an app that I can sketch on the pad, a quick on-site sketch.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there
so,
is.
You know, then I thought, well, how many sketch pads could I buy for $500? You know, there are other uses. Those are just the two that I thought might lend themselves.
Right. Well,
do you have an opinion?
Well, here's what I've noticed about the iPad. When it first came out, I looked at it and I thought, wow, that's incredibly cool. I don't have a need for it.
Uh-huh.
I've got a laptop and I've got an iPhone. What am I going to use for this product in the middle there? I mean, it's cool, and I want one, but I don't need one. What happens with the iPad is once you have it in your hands, it finds all kinds of places to be useful all on its own. It's pretty darn amazing.
Yeah.
You don't even realize the places that you can suddenly take a computer that you could never take one before. So, you know, you're looking at this from a very rational standpoint, and that's a great way to make a buying decision. If you get the one that has the cellular internet built into it, you'll be able to use it back, you know, for example, in your studio where you don't have internet access. You'll be using the cellular part of it, though, and that also requires a monthly contract, which is maybe something you're not keen on doing.
But
to access the internet somewhere where you don't have regular access.
But you can take that contract a month at a time.
Correct. You can buy it a month at a time. It's not like you're signing on to a 1 year commitment.
We go away for a couple of weeks and I just buy that month.
You buy a month and then at the end you just say, no thanks. And so that's one nice thing about the way AT&T does it. I don't know if Verizon is doing that, but AT&T lets you buy it month to month. They don't care.
That's nice.
So that's an option. But, you know, for example, one of the things that really surprised me, my roommate's mom got one of these. And one of her favorite things to do with this is she has a recipe application. She takes it into the kitchen, and she's got the thing sitting on the kitchen counter as she's cooking.
Yeah.
And, you know, who would have thought? I'm going to take a computer into the kitchen and start baking. It's just not something you think about. So, yeah, like I said, it's... If you see a legitimate use in your life and you're like, okay, I want to do X, Y, and Z, and this looks like it's going to fit the bill, fantastic. It is a computer, but it's a computer that takes away all the complexities. So you don't have to worry about defragmenting a hard drive. You don't have to worry about installing new software or updating it. It pretty much handles itself in that respect. So it's really simple to use in that respect. But once you have it, you'll be really surprised how many places you want to use it. You don't necessarily need to use it, but you'll want to use it. And it's amazing how it works itself into your life because it's just so useful.
Is there a benefit in waiting till after the first of the year?
I don't think so. I don't know exactly how often Apple is going to be updating this thing. I imagine at some point a new iPad is going to come out that will have a camera on the front of it, just like the iPhone 4 does. Because they have this thing called FaceTime, which is a video calling application that allows you to make video calls. Like I was, you know, joking, kind of like the Jetsons. We always saw this in cartoons. Well, it's here.
Right.
And I would be shocked if Apple does not update their iPad at some point with that.
Okay.
When will that happen? I don't know. Apple doesn't let us know. And like I said, the current iPad is a fantastic machine at a fantastic price. The new one will be even more so, but if the one that's out there now looks appealing to you and you can get things done that you want to get done, no reason not to get it.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Maureen. And Rodney in Milwaukee, I think he has an answer for us, perhaps.
Oh, cool.
Rodney, hi.
Hi, yes. I know a lot about iMovie and iDVD.
Oh, good.
iDVD, it was really meant for older televisions. So if you're, like, using it, it has a much lower resolution. So she's taking her film in very high resolution. And then when she exports it in iDVD because she really wants to make the nice scenes, you know, like stuff like that, iDVD never really does it on a nice resolution TV, like a high-definition TV. It will look poor every time. The best way to do it, she might not get none of the titles and all the things you get on when you do iDVD.
Okay.
Just export it as a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And because in iMovie, you go to the where it says share.
Share, sure.
And you can say export as QuickTime or export as movie. If you export that movie at the highest resolution, then burn it to a DVD by just taking that file, putting it on the DVD, and then taking that DVD and moving it to the trash can, it will burn. And then play it on a high-definition TV, and you'll see the difference.
Okay.
All right.
It didn't occur to me. I thought iDVD had the capability of handling HD content, but it sounds
like
you're saying it doesn't. All right.
It doesn't. It doesn't have that. The highest resolution is 480.
Ah.
And really, iDVD is not, I wish Apple would update it to do, but anytime those files would be much bigger for a regular DVD. And so a lot of times Apple's getting away from that because they're importing stuff, you know, to their iTV now.
Right.
It's
Apple's
iTV and do your slideshow and move it directly to iTV. It will look beautiful.
Yeah. Apple has pretty much said that, you know, iDVD is there, but they're not going to do anything with it anymore. And it's pretty much they're expecting everyone to start doing this all electronically over the net.
And so, yes, and that's why they don't even deal with Blu-ray, because they figure everything is going to be downloadable or, you know, to the everything like what all the television stations now, DirecTV, all of Netflix are all doing downloads.
All right.
Yeah. Thank you, Rod.
Well, thanks, Rodney. Okay.
Yeah, appreciate the call very much. Thank you. All right. Some good information there. I hope that emailer or that caller was listening
I suspect there is some. I know Apple has a pro line of tools, which I don't know if that's going to be more than what that particular person needed help with, but they have a program called DVD Studio Pro, which I'm certain does HD content because it is Apple's high-end tool. It comes with Final Cut Pro. It's sold as a suite called Final Cut Suite, I think. But that will include something that will do HD DVD creation, but that's for pretty high-end stuff, so I don't know if that's going to be more, you know, that's killing the mosquito with a sledgehammer, as they say.
My wife wants that. She so that's something else.
It ships
else
on six DVDs.
Yeah.
And each DVD is full of stuff, so it takes a long time to install. It's a massive program, but it's really cool.
Loretta in Eau Claire, it's your turn. Hi, Loretta.
Hi. Thanks for letting me ask this. I have trouble. I have a MyBook, a backup.
Okay.
That looks like a book.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's the culprit, but every time I make a document, in my files is that document plus backup of the same name.
Mm.
And that takes double looking through, you know, as I'm sorting through things. Can I just throw the backup things in the trash?
You probably can. The better question is, who's creating that backup copy? I suspect that your MyBook shipped with some software that you probably dutifully installed, and it is making a backup of your document, and then when you change that document, it keeps a iteration of that, so you could go back into history, for example. Now, let me ask you this. What kind of Mac are you using?
Well, it's a fairly new one. It's version 10.6.4, and it's an iMac.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Here is my suggestion. First off, find the software that the MyBook may have shipped with and try and get rid of it, turn it off, uninstall it. I can't be more specific because I don't know exactly what might be there. But basically, whatever Western Digital shipped with that little guy, we want to get rid of it because it's not necessary. Second thing I would do, if you can, is wipe off that hard drive. I don't know if you're just using it for backup, then we should be able to wipe it off because, well, you should have everything on your Mac. And then use Apple's built-in Time Machine software. It is really slick. It is really thorough. It's incredibly easy to use. And it's predicated on the idea that it uses an entire hard drive for backup purposes. So it's expecting to have that hard drive to itself.
Well, I do have Time Machine working.
Okay. So you might have both running at the same time. So if you're using Time Machine, which I would strongly recommend, see if there is perhaps some software that shipped with the MyBook that maybe it's doing that for you. And if you can, see if you can turn it off or uninstall it.
Sounds like I need to go to my Mac man.
I'm sure it's a very simple solution. But I suspect if you delete those files, they're probably going to keep popping back up.
There you go.
Okay. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234 with your question. See, the Wisconsin Department of Tourism has unveiled its Travel Wisconsin mobile application.
How neat is that? One of the things I think is just brilliant and kind of – I didn't see this coming. I'll be perfectly honest. Location-based data. We finally have phones, and when GPS got built into them, somebody had the bright idea. It's like, hey, if we know where these people are, we can give them information that's specific to wherever they happen to be. So now people can write applications and say, oh, you're in Wisconsin Dells. Here's a couple of neat things to do in Wisconsin Dells. Apple's doing it with photos now, where it'll remember where you take your pictures and it'll start grouping them together in different places. Google does this with the Maps application. If you type in, say, you know, seafood, you're over in Middleton, it'll show you that the Nautigal is just a little ways away. I mean, it's really interesting how it can say, you're here, here's interesting things around you. And I admit, I did not see that one coming, but boy, now that it's here, I'm like, that's really nice,
isn't it?
A little spooky sometimes, but...
Yeah, we've used it. We've used it on occasion, and it's really great to find, you know, if we're looking for a particular kind of restaurant or something, it'll tell you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it'll tell you.
It's awesome.
Stephanie and Bayfield, hi.
Hi. Just a quick question. My dad has an older iBook.
Okay.
And he doesn't seem to be able to connect to the internet, like a Wi-Fi spot.
Okay.
What does he need to get to do that?
Well, it's going to depend a little bit on just how old that iBook is and what kind of Wi-Fi you're accessing. Is this something he's trying to access, like Wi-Fi he has at his home or at his office or at a coffee shop?
Like coffee shop.
Coffee shop. So you're a little dependent on exactly how the coffee shop set it up. Do you know if the iBook has, I can't remember, I thought they all had wireless built into them, but you're stretching my memory here because that was a while ago.
Yeah.
The first thing I would do is, under the Apple menu, there's an option that says, the first thing says about this Mac. And then if you click on it, there's a little window that comes up and there's a button there that says more info.
Okay.
And if you click on that more info button, you will get a program called Apple System Profiler. It will tell you everything there is to know about this Mac. Somewhere in there, it will tell you whether that Mac includes a wireless networking card. If it does not, then you need to look online and see if you can find a USB wireless adapter that is Mac OS X compatible. And you can, it's basically a little thumb drive. You just plug it into a USB port, install some software, and then that will act as though it's a wireless networking card for you.
It's called a USB wireless adapter?
Yes, and you'll have to search around for it. Make sure you get one that's Mac OS X compatible. There are plenty that are not.
Okay.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Joe, thank you.
Boy, it's been a pleasure.
The time flew by.
It really does.
You'll come back again.
I hope so.
I hope you do too. Joe Rhodes, our guest, as we talk with him about Apple computers and accessories, and we'll have him back. He's a self-employed Macintosh support specialist in Madison. Take a look at his website, joerhodes.com/WPR. He's got a little Wisconsin Public Radio website there to go along with it. So Joe Rhodes, and Rhodes is like the Rhodes Scholar, joerhodes.com/WPR, and you'll find out some more about what he's doing and what's going on out there in the world of Apple. Well, there's lots going on in the world of photography, too. There's something called Photo Midwest 2010 coming up. It's a celebration of photographic art, and it's going to be in the Madison area. We'll be talking with a couple of guests next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.